You're listening to episode 90 of 88 Cups of Tea with Yin Chang.
Am I doing this right? Hi, I'm your host, Yin Chang, and thanks for joining me on 88 Cups of Tea. This podcast is created to leave you feeling motivated from interviews with storytellers, where we learn how they create opportunities for a successful career without losing sight of the values that make us human. Whew, that was a really long run-on sentence.
Hey, what's up, Storyteller Tribe? Before we get started, I wanted to thank Sunbasket for sponsoring today's episode. I'm so proud to collaborate with a meal kit delivery service that focuses on offering organic, healthy, and delicious recipes and ingredients straight to your door. Check out sunbasket.com/88cups to check out the special offer they have for our Storyteller Tribe, and hang around at the end of the show to find out more about Sunbasket. Please remember that whenever you support Sunbasket during our collaboration with them, that indirectly supports our show. Thank you so much in advance for trying out their 88 Cups of Tea offer. And if you signed up for their newsletter through our link, a big thank you to you too. On to the next part of our show. Have you joined a private Facebook group yet? It's the perfect place for you to be if you're looking for a loving community to hang out with fellow storytellers and to check in with each other about your work in progress. I'm not even being biased when I say this. Our group is incredibly loving and supportive, and they're really some of the most awesome people I've ever met. We also post threads where you can submit your listener questions for upcoming interviews with really cool guests. So be sure to come over and hang out with us at facebook.com/groups/88cups of tea. You'll feel right at home, and I'm so excited to meet you in there. That's facebook.com/groups/88cups of tea. I also wanted to take a moment to wish a very happy birthday week to the awesome Megan LaCroix and Kiara Smith Jenkins. May all of your dreams and wishes come true. Now on to our show, we have Pete Knapp, Emily Sweet, and Andrea Mai from Park Literary and Media. This is the very first time we've ever had an interview that featured more than one guest at a time, and this was the perfect episode to do so because you get a fuller picture of what goes on behind the scenes at their agency. In our conversation, we cover how Park Literary and Media works creatively to promote their clients' brands in new and exciting ways. Pete, Emily, and Andrea give us examples of their roles and responsibilities in the agency and share what they love most about their positions in the publishing world. I know there's a lot of you who are in the middle of querying or will be querying very soon, so you'll want to pay special attention when they share what they hope to find in a query letter and the first pages of the manuscript. You'll also learn why it's crucial to clarify the core of your story in your query letter. I am so excited for you to finally hear this episode, so let's jump right in. Hey everyone, I know you all are so excited about today's interview. We have Peter Knapp from Park Literary and Media, and Emily Sweet and Andrea Mai. Hey y'all, how are you?
We're doing great.
We're great.
Hi, thanks for having us.
This is the first interview ever in our show's history where we have more than one person being interviewed at the same time. We're very excited about this. How did you all fall in love with the publishing side?
Sure. So I'd be happy to start. I'm Peter, and I started with publishing actually by having first one foot in film and one foot in publishing. My first job out of school was working at a film scouting company. Essentially, I was looking for manuscripts that our clients who were film companies out in Los Angeles could potentially adapt into movies or TV shows. I always joke that my job as a literary agent was a little inevitable because my dad was a business owner and then my mom is an English professor. So I say I just basically merged those two things and became a literary agent.
And Emily, how about you? How did you get into this?
I took a slightly interesting route where I accidentally ended up in publishing. I was a lawyer for a number of years, and I did a very traditional route where I went to college and I went straight to law school. And I did a summer associate program at a large litigation firm, and I ended up in the litigation department there after I graduated from law school. After I had been there for about 5 years, I realized that I got too far along down that path and didn't really want to be there. So I started looking for something that I thought could use my legal degree, but also was much more creative and much more exciting. And I met the founder of our agency, Teresa Park, who was looking for someone who had been a lawyer but was wanting to get into the business affairs. And I originally started here in a business affairs capacity about 8 years ago, and that has since morphed into supporting our clients into all sorts of other career endeavors, basically brand building and promotional partnerships, really trying to find an audience and build themselves as authors outside of just books.
Andrea, can you also jump in and share a little bit about how you got into this world?
Sure. I actually went to college thinking that I was going to be a teacher. I remember going in my freshman year having this realization of, oh my goodness, like, I actually don't want to be a teacher. I don't love kids enough to be a teacher. I feel like I would have a really hard time with that. And someone came to my school to speak about the Denver Publishing Institute. She had attended that and she came to talk about the program. And I attended her lecture about it. And I sat there. And as soon as she started talking about it, I said, that is what I'm going to do. I'm going to work in publishing. The light bulb went off and I was, that sounds amazing. So I graduated. I went to the Denver School of Publishing, where you learned about all the different areas where it's not just editorial, but you get a chance to copy edit. You learn about marketing and publicity and sales. I really decided that I wanted to go on a sales path. I loved that. Right out of school, I got a job at Random House as an assistant on the sales side. I worked with Barnes & Noble at first, and then I started working on some other accounts where we basically sold all the books that Random House published. I loved that. And then I parlayed that into other things. I went to Penguin after that and I worked on kids' books and sales. And then I came to Park Literary about 3 years ago because of my sales experience in publishing, because the agency, Teresa, as Emily mentioned earlier, the founder, was looking for someone to fill a role here that doesn't exist at other agencies, where we are interacting directly with major accounts and has a sales background and can understand what that means for our clients and how we can best help them navigate that path. And it's been a nice blend of what I love about sales, but also what I love about being really close to the creator on the book side.
Was there one fiction that you guys read growing up that completely changed your life and had a huge influence as to perhaps making that final push into this world? And touching back to when you were younger, how reading had changed your life?
For me, it was the Redwall series. I'm the youngest of three brothers, and I felt like I was always trying to keep up with my two older brothers. One is about 18 months older, and the other is 3 years older. The one in the middle, my brother Mike, who's only 18 months older, was a super fast reader, and so he tore through the Redwall series. And so I, of course, in a desperate attempt to look as cool as him, because I looked up to him so much, of course, immediately wanted to read that as well. It was the Redwall series, obviously, too. Like everyone, Harry Potter was formative to my childhood. I think reading Harry Potter was the first time I thought of my own involvement in the creation of stories, and at the time, as a kid, it was, of course, I wanted to write these stories, and so I began my own knockoff Harry Potter pseudo fan fiction. I probably thought at the time it was more original than it was. I think those were the two series that really made me start to think about, okay, books. Like, I really love books, and also I could really see myself working with books, even at a very young age.
I always loved books from a very early age. I read everything I could get my hands on. Little Women, I must have read it about 15 times. I read Little Men as well. And Anne of Green Gables, for me, was a series that I loved it so much, and I really hope that my daughter loves it as much as I did. I read everything. Goosebumps, Nancy Drew, all of that. I always knew that I wanted to read and be around books. I thought it would be in a teaching capacity, but then when I ended up working in publishing, it was amazing that you could get a job working in creation of stories.
Listener questions is something that we've started this year, actually. We have a listener question from Yasmin Fisher, and she has a rough idea about what an agent does, but she's not really sure about the other positions in an actual agency. All of you have such incredible roles that keep up this company at Park Literary Media. Could you give us a summary of your daily work tasks and what your roles are, your responsibilities are, so that this community can have an idea, like, really what's going on in your offices and what really happens behind the scenes?
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, a huge part of my job is looking for new talent to represent and then working on their manuscripts and going to publishers to sell those manuscripts so that they can actually be published and find their way into the world. I would say the much bigger part of my job is everything that happens after the book has sold to the publisher. And then you have to go through the work of figuring out, okay, how is this book going to be positioned? How is the publisher going to market it? How is the publisher going to use publicity outreach in order to get the word out? Also, how will the publisher position it to retailers and make sure that it's visible at accounts such as Barnes & Noble, Target, Walmart, and so on? And those are the areas where certainly Emily and Andrea can jump in to say how they really help add value there. But to give you an idea of my day-to-day, it would be a little bit hard because every day is so different, but I can give you today as an example. I had a call first thing when I got in with a publisher about a book that's on submission. Then I had a meeting at a different publisher to talk about a client's foreign rights, which are represented in this case by the publisher. And so we went into the office with our foreign rights director, Abigail Coons, and really walked through all of the different territories where the book has sold, all of the territories where they're anticipating deals, and getting a state of affairs. Then we all came back to the office and we had an agency lunch. We try to have a lunch once a month where we order food in and we all sit around the conference table and really just go through what's going on in each of our lives, in each of our careers, and make sure that everyone is on the same page. And then that brought us to here. And so now we are talking to you. The day changes so much from depending on what you have going on. Sometimes you're working really hard on a book that's about to publish. Sometimes you're working really hard on a book that you're about to take on submission. Because the publication cycle is always going at different paces and at different times for different books, each day can look a little bit different from one to the next.
I think it's all different. I mean, every agency is a little bit different. You have larger agencies or smaller agencies, some that are made almost all of agents, some that have some agents and then people serving in different roles, like a contracts department or a foreign rights department, or even some in-house marketing people, sometimes film. For us, we try to offer the services of a big agency, but at a boutique side. We are doing all sorts of different things. But like Pete said, every day is different. And oftentimes, we're wearing a lot of different hats. Today, for example, was a little bit funny because I spent my morning packing. I'm flying out to Las Vegas tonight to attend the licensing show. I will be there the rest of the week, which is a little unusual. And that's happening tonight. So I was also frantically prepping all of the last minute for that. I made the decision to go last week. So it was pulled together a little bit last minute because we had a couple of meetings that we wanted to have that we weren't able to do anywhere else. Anyone who's interested in licensing, it's a great place for everyone to meet and to set some meetings. So a number of different things came up last minute. So I've been gathering materials and prepping for that. And then we had a client whose website went live recently. And so we were looking over her website. We helped her find the designer and put all of the pieces in place for that, make sure she's updating all of her backlist. So get all those covers, all of the retail links, everything set up because her book is coming out in just 3 weeks now, which is very exciting. It's her first time in hardcover. So there's been a lot of different strategy talking about the marketing and the publicity for that. We helped focus on some social media efforts as well as, like I said, her website. And then actually Andrea and I, right before we got on to talk to you, we were talking to her about all of where we're seeing her books, the different accounts who have purchased them, how things are looking. We have a meeting later this week with her publisher to go over everything right before the launch of the book. And then she'll be here for BEA next week. So we're making sure that we had covered all of the various topics that she wanted us to cover when we next saw her publisher and that we were all set for BEA and then for the book launch.
So Emily, you and Andrea do work directly with the authors. And I think in my head, I was just assuming, Pete, that you're the one dealing with authors mostly, and maybe Emily and Andrea doing their thing, running the show more so in-house and not directly in touch with the authors. So you all actually do work very closely with your clients.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. That
varies a little bit. Sometimes people come and ask our opinions about things and then pass along what we say without necessarily a direct conversation. But oftentimes, yes, we are tag teaming all of these efforts. Pete, for his clients, for example, often sets up the other client where he just set up a monthly phone call so that we could go through everything before the book comes out this fall. So he'll ask us to participate in those too, so we can go over their marketing plans and making sure that we're asking all the questions that need to be asked.
I sometimes joke, although I'm not sure it really is a joke, that I just am really a project manager as an agent. I'm the one in the middle who's making sure everyone is getting everything done and what needs to happen is happening. It really is the whole team that is representing each of our clients.
So you also play liaison as well?
Yeah, definitely.
Andrea, what about you for your daily tasks and overall responsibilities?
Not to beat a dead horse, but it really does change day to day. As Emily mentioned, for some of Pete's clients, maybe that he's coming in and asking my opinion about something, whether that's an account plan that the publisher has come back with and he's asking what I think about it because of my sales experience and the knowledge I have there. It's sometimes just understanding what questions to ask. A lot of it is weighing in on things like that, but I do definitely communicate directly with many of our clients very frequently. So it's sort of like a day-to-day. Since we're picking today, it's a good one. I'm right back from vacation today, so it's been a little bit crazy. But in terms of what I've done today, a couple of things. As Emily mentioned earlier, we have a client who has a book coming out in June. I'm really heavily immersed right now in the plans on the account side. What is Target doing with the book? What is Barnes & Noble doing? I'm reviewing those plans and talking to the publisher about them and trying to figure out what their plans are and what they're expecting. But then on the other side of that, I'm talking to the accounts myself about this author and about these. This is something that I'm constantly trying to think about is, okay, so the publisher has this plan for the book, but then what can I go back to Amazon and talk to them about so that we're hitting them from all angles? As Emily mentioned earlier, we have a client who has a book coming out in June that we're really excited about. And we've been heavily involved with the publisher and directly with the client about what she's hoping to achieve with the publication and knowing what questions to ask the publisher, but also the account. We're constantly talking to the publisher about their plans with whether it's Amazon or Target or whatever. But we also have direct relationships with all of those accounts, which is a big piece of my job, which is constantly meeting with all of them and talking to all of the buyers at the various accounts about what they're looking at right now on the book side of things. What are they excited about? What's working? What's not? What are the promotional programs that they're really focused on right now? If there's a way that we can help any of our clients in promoting those programs directly or putting those books in there that helps them. That's the unique thing, I think, really about what my job is. It's not just talking to the publisher about the retail plans for all of our clients. It's speaking to the retailers directly about their larger goals for the organization or the book department or even the entertainment space and how we can work together to create something really fun for the account that helps them boost awareness as well. And I'm really the person in the middle that can help make that happen. So if one of our clients has a film or television endeavor that they're working on in addition to a book, I'll go to a retailer and I'll pitch a promotion that includes the movie, it includes the soundtrack to the movie, it includes the book, and it's a larger promotion that I can help put together with all the various entities, the studios, the soundtrack producer, the publisher, and bring it to that retailer and make it happen. And they just have to say yes. So that's on our end of what our agency does is we're the ones who can do all that dirty work on the back end so that they can just have this great promotion that brings together books with other things or other departments, and it's more interesting for them. What I found in my job on a day-to-day really is there are a lot of great ideas and everyone has great intentions, but in terms of actually making it happen, the devil's in the details. It's calling up the movie studio. It's finding out who's responsible for that. It's calling up the soundtrack company and figuring out who's working on it. And then what is their relationship with the retailer and doing all of that homework in order to put together something that the retailer wants so that they don't have to do all of those phone calls and they don't have to do all of that follow-up. We're doing it for our clients and making it happen. That's a big part of my job that ebbs and flows on day to day, but really the larger focus. So I might be emailing Target about a book of a client that we have coming out in June, for example, today, and then following up with the publisher. And then I'm talking to the author about the plans and their ideas. It shifts. But those are a lot of the larger initiatives that we try and work on.
That's so interesting to me. You have such a huge role in shaping the landscape of what readers are going to have in their hands and really just shaping the industry in itself. I know you gave us that example of your current one coming up,
right,
and talking to Target. Do you have also another example, maybe in the past, if there was an author who got a movie deal and let us know how you tied that in and which studio you talked to and then which retail that you ended up talking to at the very end to tie everything together? Do you have an example like that you can throw at us?
One of the biggest initiatives we've done is for Nicholas Sparks. So that's one of our clients who has several movies. He's massive. He has a lot of films and a lot of books. What one of the biggest promotions we did was with Walmart, where we really tied in the book and film together. So The Longest Ride is a title. I believe it came out in 2013 in hardcover. And that promotion actually began even before I started. That was something that Emily and Pete were working on before I got here, which was partnering with the Professional Bull Riders. They have a huge presence in the US and certainly abroad as well. A lot of, it's not just male, it's also female. So 50% of their fan base is female. It made a lot of sense to work with them as a company for the Nicholas Sparks fan base, but also the book itself featured a bull rider. It really made sense to tie in with them. We ended up working with the Professional Bull Riders directly as an agency on promotion of the book and coming up with different ideas. And one idea that we worked on was actually having a sexiest cowboy vote. So pick the sexiest cowboy from the PBR and partner with Walmart, have a contest where people can vote for the sexiest cowboy at Walmart. And the winner will be featured on the Walmart edition of the trade paperback of the book exclusively. They had over 1 million votes. There were standees in the stores. People came in and voted for their cowboy. And then that cowboy was then shot and featured on the trade paper edition of The Longest Ride in Walmart stores. The other thing that we did to tie into that was when the trade paper edition came out, Walmart wanted to put it out in May for Mother's Day because that was a really great time for them in terms of store traffic. So I worked with them to figure out not only the plans for the book, but how could we make a Nicholas Sparks statement within the store? So it's not just the book exclusive edition that they have, but what else can we tie in? What we did was we reached out to all of the movie studios that have the rights to the different various films that have come out previously in DVD. There was 5 different studios that were involved, so I had to call all of them and figure out what the offer was. But basically figure out, okay, what DVDs can go merchandise next to the book? Let's figure out an offer. So if you buy the DVDs, you get something. In this case, what we did was if you buy any of these Nicholas Sparks DVDs, you get a $3 credit for Vudu, which is Walmart's digital streaming service to watch movies, which at the time a really big priority for them in terms of what they wanted to grow as a company. So we learned that from meeting with them and just having these conversations, we knew Vudu was really important. We were going to do a Vudu offer on the DVDs, but then we also did a Vudu offer on the book. So if you bought the book, you also got a $3 credit to Vudu. So again, tying into a program that Walmart was really excited about. Then we also included a bunch of other Nicholas Sparks backlist titles as well. So whatever DVDs were merchandised on the palette, we had the corresponding book as well. So it was Dear John. We also had Dear John book. Everything coordinated in one space. Basically, the whole point was getting awareness out that this book is coming out, that Walmart carries books, that Walmart carries movies, that Walmart carries the Nicholas Sparks brand in a larger way. And it was merchandised outside of the book section, outside of the movie section. It was in Action Alley, like in the aisles. It really was a statement in the store about Nicholas Sparks, about Vudu, about all these films, about PBR, because we also tied in with them because this was their exclusive edition of the book with their cowboy on it. And what Walmart loved about it and what we feel like it's a great example of this promotion and why I bring it up is that, yes, there was a book that published and yes, we did something special for the book. But what we really try to do at our agency is grow the brand in a larger way where you're not walking through a store aisle and seeing that one SKU. You're seeing a whole area that's presented to you around an author and around their brand and around what that looks like. That you now know, I want to read The Longest Ride, but I also know that there are 10 other movies and books that I haven't heard of that are also available. And then there's PBR involved. You're learning about that too. So it's sending a larger message. And that's really what we try and do with all of our clients. And what I try and think about on the retail side, you know, because the publisher is going to publish a book. They have sales reps who are great and who go in and sell to each account and figure out how many copies is Barnes and Noble taking and how many copies is Walmart taking. That's really not what we're doing. I mean, we're reviewing that information as an agency, but what we're really doing is trying to think of more creative ways to get an account to rally behind our clients in a bigger way than just the one book or the one film or the one licensing thing. It's bringing it all together. And we're trying to act as the agency that can do that. Everybody else is operating separately. The film companies, they're going to put out the movie and that's all they're caring about. And the publisher is putting out the book and the PBR is going to keep doing what they're doing. But we try to bring it all together and make a bigger statement.
What's that one thing that makes Park and Literary so special that you guys want to stay?
I think something that makes our agency stand out is definitely the team approach. And more than the team approach, the team itself. I think we do have the best people in the business here in terms of, not to make anyone on the call blush, but in terms of Andrea's background and expertise and also her doggedness as a salesperson, Emily's expertise in terms of her background, both as a lawyer, but also in branding and licensing, the head of the agency, who also is a former lawyer who comes with that overhead brand approach. And I think the team itself definitely sets us apart. More than that, also, I think it's the approach that we are not a high volume agency. We have such heavy hitter clients with great intention, do not have a huge number of clients. And as a result, we're really able to get behind each individual client in a substantial way. Those two things together, having a team that brings to bear such a wide variety of expertise, and then also being able to apply those resources to a relatively select number of clients, lets us really blow out everything we're doing to the largest degree possible.
I know you guys mentioned each month you have these team meetings. With these meetings, do you feel it not only highlights the authors that you're working with, the clients that you guys have, but is there any meetings that you have on the monthly or on the weekly or even twice a year where you check in with each other as coworkers and how you guys are working together as a team outside of just focusing on authors?
There's just 8 of us, so it's kind of hard to get away from each other, even if we wanted to. So yes, by virtue of that fact, I think we're often checking in and spending time together periodically throughout the day. We almost always have a really good sense of what everyone's working on a regular basis. In order to catch anything that we may have missed in our normal day-to-day, we have a standing weekly meeting at 11 a.m. on Tuesdays where we gather in the conference room with coffee, whomever is in the office, and touch base and talk about what we're working on, maybe give a more formal update to something that we've filled individuals in from time to time. I think we have a very good office camaraderie and work together very well, which helps fuel a lot of these ideas and make sure that everyone has the support to get done what they're trying to do.
To give you a sense of just how close we are, we actually, as an agency, went out to Los Angeles at either the end of April or the beginning of May, and all of us stayed in a single Airbnb. We spend a lot of time together, but we like it.
I love that. You love each other. It's family.
Yeah, I call this my work family.
That's amazing. I know I mentioned that there was a question from one of our listeners, Yasmin Fisher, from earlier. She also wanted to know, and just to tie it in, what are your favorite things about your job? So what is that one thing that you look forward to every day? I mean, aside from each other and seeing each other's faces every single day, every second of the day.
I think for me, it always comes down to the thrill of falling in love with a story. That's where it really all stems from, is whether it's going through my submissions and for the first time discovering a new author who's never been published before and discovering their voice and the story that they have, which is always such an exhilarating experience, or discovering a client I've been working with for a number of years who sends a new manuscript along and it just is so clearly meant to be their next book. It's that moment of falling in love with someone's work that I think is just so special and keeps me always wanting to come back day after day after day. I mean, obviously I have to anyways, but I just love that sense of, again, connecting with something that someone created out of their imagination, which is such an act of magic in my mind.
Ooh, I love that. I see so much creativity in your life. It's at the core of your job and who you are. I love that about you and how you work with your job. Andrea and Emily, what about you?
To expand on what Pete just said, particularly because this is so insightful based on how we each have the jobs that we do. But I think it's taking that project, whatever we're working on, and bringing it out into the public, really being able to touch people's lives in a different way. I am not at all creative myself. I would love to be a writer. I am a terrible writer. I can put together a sentence, to be clear, but I am not a creative writer at all. And I just am so in awe of the talent that it takes to do something like that, that I love being able to give it an audience and to work on a campaign that lets people in all areas of the country, and then sometimes also internationally, find the story and connect to it in the same way.
For me, it's really more about definitely those things. But what I always found when I was in a publishing house, which was so hard for me to sometimes be witness to, is, and I think for everyone in publishing, is there's so many great books, and so many times it's very hard to get the visibility. It's very hard to get it out in the world and for people to find it. It was sometimes very overwhelming just because of how many books the publisher will come out with a year, that I sometimes felt on the sales side, I couldn't even give the attention to something in the way that I wanted to, just because there were so many books that we were working on. And I really appreciate the fact that here I can devote that attention to it in the way that I want to. And it feels really good to close a deal. We're getting an account to do something really special for a book of one of our clients, where we are going to get that visibility for them and for their book and for people to ultimately be able to find it in a way that they wouldn't have if we weren't involved. That's really exciting for me. And I still love that every day when I'm able to confirm something and then share that good news with one of our clients, or if it's not directly, or if I'm calling Pete and I'm saying, we got, you know, Barnes and Noble to do this and this, because it just feels like such a win that we're getting somebody to take notice of these amazing works that our clients are doing. And having a little bit less of that and being able to focus more is what I think is really great.
I am curious, Andrea, for your side of what you do, I know you work with all the retailers directly. How much leeway is there when you might have a really fantastic author, but you also have a debut author who doesn't have as much clout as someone like Nicholas Sparks, but you know their work is freaking phenomenal. You're like, dude, this is the next hit. Like, you gotta take this in. But let's just say Barnes & Noble or Walmart's gonna be, well, their story doesn't fit in with our campaign right now. You got to skip this one. Then you really won't let go. How much leeway is there for you to fight and push back?
I really think it's sort of a dance, and it depends on the situation. It depends on the author. It depends on the book. It depends on the format of the book. You know, is it hardcover? And maybe the format isn't right for a particular retailer. And if it's coming out in hardcover, we don't want to push really hard, and neither does the publisher, to get it somewhere. It might not do as well if there's price sensitivity, and then the paperback, they won't want to take it because of the sales track. Like, there's always a lot of things you're considering. But what I like to think of, it's a great question, that yes, definitely not everyone is at that level of Nicholas Sparks. And we have a lot of clients who aren't yet, but we envision them that they could get there, you know, and that's more what the conversation is with that retailer, is less about, okay, let's do this today because we have this film coming out. It's more of, we have this amazing author who has written this book, whatever it may be. This is where we see it going. These are the other things the agency is working on, whether it be licensing endeavors, we're involved in the film deal somehow, there's a television deal, whatever it might be. It's giving them that insider information in a way that they wouldn't have from just a publisher or just a film agent. And we're giving them that holistic view of what we see the path for this author and this brand, and brainstorming together on how we can get there. A lot of it is conversations in that way, where it might today not be, okay, you're taking this in and you're putting it in every store at this quantity, but it's more of, I want to just make you aware of all these things we're working on, because this is one to watch. This is where we see it going. This is where we expect it to be the next book. So what do we need to do today to make sure that we're going to get it to that place? I really think it's more of that and less of pushing necessarily to have one specific thing done. It's more of giving them the setup and having that conversation about what it's going to look like and what it could look like. Because I think the other thing that I find very interesting and happens all the time is that everybody has their job that they have to do. If you're a buyer at Walmart, for example, there's a million things that you have to do that you have to check off the list every day. So you have to make sure that you have your set done for your Easter promotion that's coming up, and you have the hardcover bestsellers going in for the month, and you have to make sure that you have the quantities and the layouts done. But there isn't a whole lot of opportunity for that buyer to get to sit, take a step back for a second and think about, okay, so here's what the department looks like right now. Here's what I want it to look like. And let's brainstorm with somebody outside their own company about an entertainment property that could be really interesting for me in a different way than what I've been working on. And what does that look like? Let's spitball a little bit about what that could be. Those conversations are often what lead to some of the most interesting promotions we've done, because they're outside of the day-to-day grind of what has to get done today. And it's more of a larger strategy discussion.
Absolutely. And I also love the way you do approach it, because on the retailer side, I would be more excited when you're presenting it like a whole package. Emily, you mentioned that you're flying out for that convention in Las Vegas today. What's being talked about and what are your goals?
Because we represent authors, we have a number of different IPs. So how I envision the licensing show going is that everyone comes up to me and says that they want to work with me and offers our clients money to various brand extensions, furniture lines and stationery and all sorts of things. But in all seriousness, what we're really trying to do is, my day-to-day is about helping our clients build their brands. So their author is at the core, but are there things that they can do outside of their book properties. So for example, I'll just talk about something that we did in the past. Several years ago, in connection with Sam's Club, we did a capsule furniture line for Nicholas Sparks called the Black Mountain Collection. And that came out of a conversation that we had had with Sam's Club, where they thought it might be interesting to do a brand extension for Nicholas Sparks. At the same time, Nick had been doing some construction on his house and had gotten very interested in furniture and interior design and that kind of thing. We thought it might be really interesting because people associate him with this beachy coastal Carolina vibe. And also the idea is you're reading books at home and to relax, and you're entering this Nicholas Sparks world that's all about love and loss, and it's all in North Carolina. And how do you experience that? You read books and you read them in your home, and what would your home look like if it was inside a Nicholas Sparks world? So we came up with 7 pieces of furniture that we thought could inhabit the Nicholas Sparks world. And we licensed that to a furniture manufacturer who did the furniture for us. We sold it into Sam's Club, and we did it in January of 2015. We cross-promoted it in his movie that was being filmed at the time, The Longest Rides. It wasn't just figuratively in the Nicholas Sparks world. It was literally in the Nicholas Sparks world because it was on set and in the movie. And that was kind of a fun out of the box way. It helped promote that particular book and also appealed to one of his outside interests at the time. I think it's hard for authors. It can be very isolating. You're basically writing on your own all of the time. And then when the book's done, you send it out into the world. But it was an opportunity for him to do something that was outside of his traditional norm and something that he could do in collaboration with other creative people.
Thank you for sharing that example. That was a really cool one.
Yeah, thanks.
So organic too, about how that came about. Also, Emily, you did mention before about strategizing with authors for website. That's something that has come up in our community. A lot of them are represented by literary agents. There are many who are about to query for literary agents and others that are working on their manuscripts and are building up that confidence to reach out to everybody. I know that some of them are wondering overall if they should have an author's website. Let's say you bring on a debut author. It's their first time. Do you think it would make a difference if they already had a website before coming on board?
I can answer this since I'm the one really in the query trenches who's really looking for the authors to sign potentially for the agency. I think it can certainly help excite me, but the reality is it truly does begin with the book, right? Like the first thing that happens is I want to read the book. And if I fall in love with the book, it won't matter if you don't have a website, because I can always help build a website. I can help get the author engaged on Twitter and Instagram or wherever it may make sense, depending on what the author is comfortable with and what their book is about. I guess the answer would be yes. I think if it's natural and, you know, an organic thing for the author to be doing anyways, sure, I do think having a website and starting to get comfortable with that world will make it less steep of a learning curve once they are actually preparing for publication and should be getting that stuff going. Because the longer lead time you have to start building up those platforms and to get even the writing community, let alone the young adult reading community, but even the writing community engaged in some way online, the more powerful those tools will be when your book ends up coming out. I don't think having a website before going into the query trenches is by any means necessary.
I agree with that. I would say I equate websites to digital business card, if you will. Is it helpful if you can hand someone a business card when you're talking about making a deal? Sure. But do you need it? No. Because if someone wants to work with you, they're going to remember you regardless of whether you gave them a business card or not. I think that's it. So you can't really understate how important the book is. If you have a really good book, then none of the other stuff is going to matter, particularly in the query process. Now, I do think that if you do have a published book, it can be particularly helpful because authors in 2017, quite frankly, have to do a lot of their own marketing. Marketing budgets are shrinking. Publishers, they have a lot of books. The fact of the matter is no one is going to love your book and be able to sell it better than you will. Having a great website is part and parcel of that. It gives people a place to come when they read your book and they know more about you, but it's not necessary. There are plenty of huge runaway bestsellers where authors didn't want to do websites and didn't do websites, and it didn't affect their ability to sell the book at all.
I think also that a huge part of the website question these days is the reality is a lot of fans do want to connect directly in some way with the creators of the work that they love, right? Like there is that expectation in the social media age of there can be potentially not just me putting things out to them, but actually a back and forth conversation with the people that we admire to some degree. And so I think a great example of a website that has really helped a series and helped its sales and visibility is Soman Shainani, who's a client of mine who writes the best-selling School for Good and Evil series, has a website for that series where fans can actually go online and see his blog and comment on the blog. He's got a YouTube channel that he posts on the series. There are forums for fan fiction. There are contests and games. And so there's a lot of interactive content that lets the fans of the series engage in the world of the series beyond just the books. I think that's a great example of a successful website because in that case, it's not just a brochure, like the actual content of the website is actually changing constantly. And so there's a reason for people to continue to come back to it again and again.
I do have a question, just riffing off of what we've been talking about. I mean, I see quite a few authors now who have their books published who were not writers really at all before. And let's just say more so celebrities, whether it's YouTube celebrities or reality TV star celebrities or whatever. And the writing, in my opinion, isn't that strong. And there are many other debut authors who have really much stronger writing. Is that something where those numbers do really affect where it's okay, writing manuscript, not so good, but numbers, they obviously can sell. So we can hook them up with a really good editor or something and we can guide them so that it could be at a better level for the writing, but still get those sales. What are your thoughts on that?
I think the same thing that I was just saying about regarding how in this day and age, fans want to connect with authors directly. That same thing is driving those YouTube books, for example, that you're seeing, where like fans really want that connection with a YouTuber or a celebrity that they particularly admire. And they will look for that connection in all different avenues. And so I think sometimes a book is one of those avenues. And the reality is publishing is a business. And so if publishers say, hey, this YouTuber has fans who would be willing to pay $17.99 or $26.99 or whatever the price point may be for a hardcover version of their book, regardless of maybe what the content is, and these books do vary from more collagey picture books with captions to actual prose and novels and that type of thing. But if they see the audience for it and they do think that the author slash celebrity's platform is such that they can really drive sales, I think that is where a lot of those are coming from. And some of them have honestly been more successful than others because sometimes the book doesn't make sense and it ends up not really reaching the same audience and does not feel authentic to the same audience that craves that authentic connection to those creators.
Gotcha. Thank you for recapping that. From your company that you're representing and with your work as a literary agent and what you look for, do you focus more on quality or you're okay with lesser quality but more numbers? I know that we all know, like, if it sells, it sells. But I'm sure there are certain people that do focus on certain types of writing.
For me personally, as I said, my favorite part of the job is falling in love with the story for that first time, whether it's a debut or an author's third manuscript. And we are looking at the long game here. And so we are not looking to represent people who we can quickly get a book out of and then flash in the pan. We're looking for people who truly want to be authors and who will continue to write books and develop their career. And a huge part of that is developing their craft. And so I think definitely for me, it does begin with falling in love with the writing and with the imagination on the page. In terms of my personal taste, sure, my taste varies from like very literary prose driven to very commercial voicey concept driven stuff. And that's just because that's what I love. But I think all of the authors I represent are really excellent at what they do. For me, no, my favorite part of the job is of course falling in love with the stories and the writing. And so I'm looking for authors who want to continue writing books. And also a huge part of that is continue continuing to challenge their craft and improve it. And so I think while there are opportunities financially to definitely go after YouTuber books, it's not really what we do as an agency for the most part, unless those people actually want to be authors, because we are really playing a long game in terms of building brands, in terms of building stuff beyond just flash in the pan book. I always begin with the writing, and I do have to love the writing. And though my taste does vary from more commercial to more literary, depending on the specific story and project, I think all of the authors that I represent are so excellent at what they're doing and at the type of fiction that they write.
I'm going to grill you and drill you a little bit. We have a lot of people who are in the query trenches. We have a listener question from Joshua Clark. What are you looking for in your opening pages? What makes you decide to keep reading or stop? And along with the same questions, Devin Berglund from our group also asked, what is something that jumps out at you in query letters that you wish you'd see more often?
The first question regarding the opening pages, I think what I really look for in the opening pages is a character that I want to know more about. If I start in the opening pages and I'm somehow hooked by the character and want to know more about them and how they got to where they are and what it is they want and what's standing in the way of it, all of those basic building blocks of character and conflict, then I have to read on because that's the only way that I'll scratch that itch. And so it definitely starts with an intriguing character for me. In terms of the query letters, you know, I would say the big thing is being succinct, honestly. I think the big issue with a lot of query letters is that they're not succinct. And so even though there's a lot of cool stuff going on in the query that is intriguing, it's hard to figure out, okay, but what's at the heart of this story? If I were to describe this story to an editor, how would I describe it in a way that it was very clear what at its core this story is going to be about? And if I can't discover that core in the query letter, then even if there's a lot of cool stuff going on, it becomes a little harder for me to get excited about the manuscript. Sometimes, to be entirely honest, I actually skip the query letter at first and begin with the opening line, because the opening sentences, the opening passages, if I'm loving the voice, then that tells me a lot about the writer and their potential. And then I'll go back and look at the query and get a sense of what it's about. I change up how I approach my queries, depending on the mood I'm in and how much coffee I've had and everything. But I definitely look to the writing first.
Awesome. I feel like usually literary agents have one or two or three really shining examples of either the first line or query letters that really stood out to them. Do you have an example?
I actually have an example of a really excellent pitch from a query that is not a book I represent. Becky Albertalli, who is represented by Brooke Sherman, had a line in her pitch to agents, and I think it also went to editors when Brooke sent it out, but I'm not sure. That was about her book, Simon vs. Homo Sapien Agenda, and it described it as an updated You've Got Mail starring gay teens with good grammar. I always turn to that example because it does so much in so little space, right? Like, it tells you what it's about, it gives you a cultural reference point in terms of the You've Got Mail comp, and it gives you a sense of the humor and perspective of the voice, that it has that wry sense of humor. So right away you have a sense in one sentence what this book will be, not just in terms of subject matter, but also in terms of tone. I think that's a really great example to look at in terms of, with very little real estate, you can do a lot.
Amazing. We have a question from Benny Long, who would love to know, were there any books you regret turning down, or if you've ever dropped a writer after signing him or her?
There are books that I turned down that went on to sell. Of course, there was always that part of you that wonders, should I have taken a closer look at this or should I sign the author? But really, in the big picture, the answer is no, because if I did not feel so in love with the manuscript that I felt I had to offer representation, there is a very good chance that I would not have been the right agent for it anyways. So definitely, I can't pretend I don't ever regret it, but I think ultimately it's for the best that it ends up with the agent who had the vision and ended up going on to sell it. In terms of parting ways with clients, I think every agent has at one point or another parted ways with a client, and usually it happens just because the vision of the agent and the author do not perfectly align, and it becomes clear that a different agent could better represent that author's work, whether it's regarding the editorial vision or the vision of the long-term career. In the case that I'm thinking of specifically, where I parted ways with a client, it was that the author wanted to branch out and do a different kind of fiction that was not really in my wheelhouse or area of expertise. I'm sure every agent at some point or another in their careers will have to part ways with a client, but it's never something that you go into the relationship hoping for or expecting. The goal, of course, is always to have a long-term relationship with the author that will, again, go over many years, that you will help build their career from book one all the way through to book 40.
And just to clarify, when you were saying vision several times, do you mean your vision as in you need to be on board, being on the same page with them? So the author gives you this manuscript, and let's say you fall in love. What do you mean by your vision?
Usually it's not that for the first manuscript, because when I'm offering representation, I have a conversation about the editorial work I think needs to be done. And so if they're not on the same page as me, then that's pretty obvious from the beginning. And so they would probably not pick me as an agent. For me, has happened with long-term career vision stuff in terms of a lot of times authors in the beginning are kind of playing around in different genres and also different categories. And I don't, for example, do adult fiction really. And so if an author decides to start doing adult fiction or is jumping between young adult and adult fiction, there is a good chance that I won't ultimately be the right person to sell that adult novel. Potentially someone in-house at the agency would want to take it on, but since I don't do adult fiction, that'd be a case where I might point them in a different direction in terms of representation.
Perfect. Pete, one last question for you. I'm sorry, I'm like totally drilling you.
No, absolutely.
Okay, so when you mentioned the editorial part, Megan LaCroix in our group did ask a question tying in with that. She's wondering, how editorial are you and how many passes do you typically do with a client on their manuscript before putting them on submission?
I am definitely editorial. I don't think there is any usual in this business. So I have had manuscripts that I've quite literally signed and sent out almost in the exact same form that they came into me, because they were very polished and very on mark for the market, and they sell very quickly. So there are various reasons that you might do that. And then I've also, there was another manuscript with my client Emily Bain Murphy, who wrote this book, The Disappearances, that's coming out in July. I sent that on submission, and it sold to HMH within about 3 weeks. So it would seem like a very quick sale. But the reality is, I actually signed that book a year before sending it on submission. And so we worked on that book very closely together for an entire year before we ever sent it to editors. That's a case where the author and I got really in deep with the editorial work. I could see exactly what needed to be done. And Emily did just such a fantastic job with the revisions, but it involved a whole change of perspective and eliminating one perspective. And she changed tense and changed the time period the book was actually set in. So a lot happened in that year. So, you know, I think the editorial process varies so much from book to book, and there are so many different factors that are involved in it.
You three have been amazing. If there's any parting words that you have with my community, do you each have any parting words of advice or boost to the spirit for them, just to hear from you guys?
My advice would be to always focus on the craft, because the reality is, if you keep improving your craft and you continue writing your stories, you will get published. And for some authors, it's easy to look at these big success stories, of course, of the authors who wrote their first manuscript, got an agent within a week, then got a book deal a week later, and you know, they're just a big bestseller now. But those are truly the exceptions. And most authors' careers don't go that way. That does not mean that they're not successful. It means that it's maybe a little bit slower of a build, and they had to spend a little more time finding the right story. It is so worth it, because again, you get to then send those stories out to readers and change lives. I really do think that books have that ability to change a person's life. My advice is really simple. It's keep doing it. It's so worth it at the end of the day.
Oh, thank you, Pete. And Andrea and Emily?
I would definitely say the same thing. We represent a number of big best-selling authors, and every single one of them wrote at least one, if not more, books that were turned down and remain unpublished. You're seeing the success stories, but you don't always get a chance to see all the work, the blood, sweat, and the tears that goes into the process. And it happens for everyone. And if this is what you want to do, you just keep at it. Sometimes you just have to put down a book that you worked really hard on and try something else. I know how painful that is, to put so much work into something and then have to start new, but sometimes that's what you have to do. For whatever reason, that story just doesn't connect, but if you really want to be a writer, you will come up with some other idea. Like Pete said, focus on the craft, focus on your writing, keep learning, keep striving, and you'll get there.
Thank you so much, Emily. Andrea, did you want to say any parting words of advice?
I would say a little bit twist to that even more so is that you can have a book published and there's a lot of acclaim and excitement and it doesn't work and it doesn't sell and it doesn't meet expectations or whatever it is. But those are always changing. And that doesn't mean that it might not publish in paperback and be a huge success because you're continually thinking about what you can do to get the word out and always be passionate about what you wrote. And if you feel strongly about it and this is what you want to do and this is what you're excited about, it will find its audience. You just can't get discouraged because it's a hard road. And I don't know that everyone always completely understands that because we see the success stories, but there are many of those. And then there's many, many, many more that are uphill battles, but you're always going after what you want. And that's the important thing, is just not to let it go, is to always think about where you see it and keep pushing for that.
Thank you so much, Andrea. You three have been bomb.com. Please let us know how we can find you on social media. Andrea and Emily, Pete, is there like a Twitter that we should follow you at and say hi, or a Facebook page? Let us know.
Yep. So Park Literary is also on Twitter at Park Literary. We do have a Facebook, though it's really used just for tagging at this point, and we have an Instagram as well. So we are on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, and then I can be found on Twitter and on Instagram as well.
And that wraps up our episode with Pete Knapp, Emily Sweet, and Andrea Mai from Park Literary and Media. Pete, Emily, and Andrea, thank you so much for that incredibly informative and fun group discussion. Storytellers, I hope you learned as much as I did from this episode, and I hope the advice and tips will help make your querying process a smoother one. You can find Park Literary and Media on Twitter at Park Literary, and you can also say hi to Pete on Twitter at Pete J. Knapp. Check out the resources and books mentioned in this episode by heading over to 88cupsoftea.com/podcast/Park Literary. After hearing from many of you about how you wish you had more help in the kitchen so you could spend more time working on your writing, I am so excited that we're collaborating with Sunbasket. I've been trying to eat healthier over the last year, and it gets a bit tough when it comes to finding the time. I know many of you are like me and don't have all the time in the world to plan out our meals, trek to the farmer's market each time, and figure out all the measurements and portions for each ingredient. And that's why you will love Sunbasket. They deliver delicious, healthy recipes with easy-to-follow directions and pre-measured fresh ingredients straight to your door. And I'm talking about organic, non-GMO ingredients from the best farms and fishermen, and everything is seasonal and sustainably sourced. They have an amazing selection of paleo, gluten-free, vegetarian, breakfast, and new family options created by an award-winning chef and are all nutritionist approved. The recipes are delicious, and you'll literally have each meal prepared in about 30 minutes. Go to sunbasket.com/88cups today and get 3 free meals with your first order. That's sunbasket.com/88cups to get 3 healthy, easy-to-prepare meals. sunbasket.com/88cups. And don't forget to join our Facebook group if you're looking for an intimate community for storytellers where you can check in about your writing and hang out with other storytellers. You can also submit questions for future guests on our show, and we recently added live unboxing and book haul videos. So join me over in our private Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/88cupsoftea. There's tons of love, support, and encouragement going on in this special community of ours, and I am not even kidding. We have some of the most amazing people in our group. I can't wait to meet you in there. Join us at facebook.com/groups/88cupsoftea. Have an amazing rest of your week, and I'll catch you in the next episode.
Hey guys, it's me again. Thanks so much for listening in on 88 Cups of Tea. Go create something magical today, and I'll catch you in the next episode. Bye.